Okay, so this is a talk about Utopia Documents, which is a bit of software for reading scholarly and particular scientific articles that we've been working on in Manchester for the past 4 or 5 years. I'm Steve Metzger, that's my Twitter handle. The alternative title for this, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the PDF. So this is a game that Jeff Builder introduced you to the idea of. And it's kind of like I Spy, academic I Spy. So what are we looking at here? What's this thing that's on screen? Just roughly speaking, what is it? It's the title page of a paper. So what's that bit up there? Title. Next bit, put the next block underneath it. And down underneath that. Yeah, so, well, it's keywords in this case. But actually, knowing nothing about the journal layout that we're seeing here or what journal it is or anything, as humans, we're really good at just recognising the different artifacts here. So, you know, that's a heading. This is going to be body text. That's going to be body text. What about this bit down here? What might that be? Corresponding author. And then, you know, other guy at the top. So, actually, we've become trained to recognise these things fairly straightforwardly. And it's because, you know, scholarly communication is not a new thing. The format and layout of these articles is not something that's happened by accident. There are particular ways of laying things out, particular ways of doing the typography that make them easy to read, that have been built up over decades, possibly over centuries of typographic arts, to something that is actually relatively straightforward and nice to look at. And I guess the story of this talk is that a scholarly article, for me, it's not a web page, it's a different kind of beast. A scholarly article is not a web page, it's not a website, it's a different kind of thing. It's not a blog or a wiki. Or a database. And that's okay. All of those things are cool things, and they all have an important part to play in the communication of science. But a scholarly article is a different kind of beast, at least for the time being. And one of my favourite descriptions of a scholarly article is something that Jan Belkrop, who was very much involved in the original sort of open access movement, described it as keeping the minutes of science. And it's one of the key angles on scholarly publishing, I think, that's really important, and it's a dangerous thing to throw away, in that the things that we publish become the minutes of the scientific process, so that you can cite them back in history with some confidence that that object won't sneakily change to say the opposite of what it did a couple of weeks ago and make you look like a complete idiot. So these are important kind of qualities of the way in which science has been published historically. And the other angle that I really like on the scholarly article is a description from Anita de Ward from Elsevier, and she described them as stories that persuade with data. And I think this is a really elegant encapsulation of what a scholarly article is. It's not just kind of like a brain dump of my favourite things with kind of hyperlinks all over the place to random stuff. It's a self-contained story and the data and evidence, ideally, to back that story up. So this is unashamedly a slide borrowed from Carve, which I think also sums up the state of scholarly publishing at the moment. So this is a food processor. Into a food processor, you take lovely pieces of fruit, individually encapsulated in all their loveliness. You shove them into a machine, you whiz them around, and you end up with a lovely smoothie, which is a kind of a tasty, nutritious, good for you, palatable mush. This is a word processor, into which we put ideas, title abstracts, and figures, and out of which comes a sort of a palatable mush, with all the kind of the data in our story all kind of mushed into one kind of thing. And this is where the scale of scholarly publishing at the moment is starting to become problematic. So, a bit of surrealist art to move the afternoon on. So this is René Magritte's painting, Belgian surrealist artist, Cécile Nespartin-Peach. And about this picture, he said the following. The famous pipe, how people reproached me for it. And yet, could you stuff my pipe? No, it's just a representation, is it not? So if I had written on my picture, this is a pipe, I'd have been lying. And the idea behind this is that his picture clearly isn't a pipe. It's a picture of a pipe, a representation of a pipe. And the point behind this is that the thing that we publish as a scholarly article isn't the science. It's a view on the science, or a view of the story, a particular encapsulation of that. And I think that's currently where some of the ways in which we publish are problematic, in that people start to get obsessed with the object as being the thing that object is actually representing. So an article is just a representation of the experiment or the piece of knowledge that somebody has gained. And in terms of kind of technical point of view, what that really means is that what we should be thinking of is that from now on, the thing that we encapsulate as the article of record shouldn't be the PDF or the HTML page or the EPUB or the MOBI or whatever format is that you'd be happy to like at the time, but rather the machine-readable representation of that, from which generating all these other different types of formats, PDF, things that you can read on your browser, things that look good on your mobile device, should be just generated as a side effect, and that all of these things should be synchronized. So that you have different versions that you can read in the back. And I guess this is where I disagree with Mark, really, that I think if you have the article's record as being the electronic version, then the other things should be linked, so that if somebody is commenting on the PDF version, it should be integrated with comments that are being made on the HTML version or the MOBI version of the particular article. So I thought I'd just look at a couple of examples of how complex it is to extract information from some of these stories. So some classic papers, the amide groups of insulin, Fred Sanger. It's a 7-page paper, sort of revolutionary in its field, and it's sort of basically just goes blah, blah, blah for quite a long time. And then there's small pages there, that goes on like that. And carries on doing that for a while. And then there's a bit more stuff. And then it goes on a bit, and then it stops, pretty much. And actually, the real bit of this paper is in the summary. And the summary says, the results are summarised in table 7. Right? If you go back to table 7, which is on the previous page, now, you know, so Fred Sanger in the 1950s or something like that, his XML skills are probably lacking a little bit. So this is what's presented in that paper, is an image. And actually, this is a very good figure for what he was trying to explain, but utterly, utterly incomprehensible to a machine, and actually quite hard for a human to interpret. There's no standard notation here, because there was no standard notation at the time. So important information is buried within these stories, in figures and diagrams and tables. Take another paper. Molecular structure of nucleic acids, very important one. This is the Watson and Crick paper. Down here, this structure has two helical chains, each coiled around the same axis C diagram. So that's pretty much the discovery of DNA in one sentence and a hand-drawn picture. And perhaps in one of the biggest understatements, this structure has novel features which are of considerable biological interest. And I think finally, it has not escaped our notice that this is a specific pairing that we have postulated immediately suggests a possible copying mechanism for the genetic material. But actually working out what that really means, the implications of that, certainly for a machine, is astonishingly hard, because it's kind of buried in amongst very elegant but human-readable prose. And bottom line is that humans like stories, computers really don't like stories, computers like data and stuff that's in a format that they like. At the opposite end of the spectrum, paper by Pritchard and Doug Kell about this diagram, basically. A lot of text describing this diagram. But what they've done is describe that diagram in machine-readable form. But just to show you how hard that is, this is one particular bit of that diagram, phosphenylpyruvate, which has taken me several years to work out how to pronounce, takes up this amount of RDF to describe it. So it's a non-trivial task to actually make this stuff machine readable. And just to basically describe one part of this graph of relationships between different molecules, essentially. And one of the things that takes an awful lot of flack these days is the PDF format itself. It's for something that's basically just a format, it gets quite a lot of bad press. It's been described as an insult to science, like inventing the telephone and then using it to transmit Morse code. And one of my favourites, like a hamburger that we are trying to turn back into a cow. And the reality is that we still consume a lot of data, a lot of our stuff in PDF form. And why is this? Some people say 80%. In the case of PLOS, it's something like 14-15%, they claim at the moment. But it has lots of nice properties. So here's the kind of thing that I hear said about the PDF quite a lot. I asked for some data, but was sent it as a table in a PDF. I can't do anything with that, fair enough. Therefore, PDFs are stupid. But actually, you know, if you asked for a video and somebody sent you the individual pictures in a Word document, you wouldn't be blaming Word as being the bad thing. So there's no such thing as a stupid format. There's just stupid people, basically, misusing different bits of technology. And the PDF has lots of nice qualities. Mainly, the nice quality that I particularly like about it, and this is true for Mobi and EPUB and sort of improvements on the PDF, is it's mine to keep. And until we have totally open data on the web, that's something that every scientist is going to treasure, because you're not going to trust the fact that a link that you went to yesterday that is authorised by your institution is going to be readable tomorrow or when you move from one place to another. So for the time being, the PDF is a necessary artifact of the fact that our data on, and our articles on the web aren't totally open. So just to finish, some examples of things that you can do with PDF using the software that we've been building. So it's an academic paper reader, replacement for something like Adobe Acrobat or Preview. Drop in a PDF, and as soon as you drop in the PDF, Utopia starts analysing it and looking for relationships between that article and other online databases and resources. So at the top here we have the citation information, which is pulled from Crossref, and which you can reformat into whatever format you like for citation data. You can get BibTeX or Vancouver style, or you know, any of the kind of common citation formats. You've got the altmetric scores for it, so, and these are things that are sort of updated dynamically as you read your articles. Tells you what people have been saying on Twitter about this particular article, and obviously that will be different from day to day. It also links to Impact Story and other versions of alternative metrics. Here we have the information from Mendeley about what other people, well, Elsevier these days, I guess, about what other people are reading that's related to this this particular article. It links to Sherpa Romeo, which tells you what you can do with this article in terms of archiving and open access. Probably can't read that, but that's the information about what you're, that's telling you this is an open access article. And down here, the bibliography, so that you can actually click through from one item in the paper to any other bits of the paper, to any other papers that it references. And if they're open access articles, they automatically get downloaded so that you can read those in Utopia and carry on doing the same kind of process. So on the data side of things, here in the article we have a table of data. And normally in a PDF this would be really irritating, because if you wanted to use that, you'd have to kind of type those numbers back in. Utopia is able to recognise that this is a table of data and make it into a little sort of interactive spreadsheet-y type thing, which you can export back to play with in whatever your favourite tools are, or do some simple plotting, so you can actually sort of get your hands on the actual underlying data. And we can also do things that are very specific in this case to the life sciences, and in some cases specific to features that particular publishers have enabled for us. Which is to get hold of, the image browser is generic, that works for material from any publisher. So you can skip between the images. In this case, it's the image of a protein that's been linked to the database that provides the molecular structure for that protein, so that you can invoke a three-dimensional browser and play with the structure of the protein. And you can comment on articles, and it makes things much more interactive. I'd just like to finish very briefly with an example of kind of taking it to another level in terms of extracting information. So this is a paper in which a series of novel small molecules have been published. So what you've got up here is the skeleton for these molecules, and then down here a table with various little bits that can be glued onto those molecules to make a whole set of molecules in different combinations, along with the properties of those molecules. But those are just pictures, so getting those into a form that you can compute with is normally hard work. The kind of thing we can do in Utopia is, with a little bit of help from the user to identify which bits are tabular and which bits are molecular, is start to extract those images, automatically recognize their chemical structure, and reconstitute all possible combinations of the molecule along with their properties. So this turns something that's essentially pictures as part of the story into information that a scientist can actually put into their simulations and their workflows and kind of do further experiments with. So here the algorithm's got it slightly wrong, so we need to correct one bit that it did wrong. So there's kind of a sort of crowdsourcing element here of fixing the fact that had misrecognized. And then you press the export button, and a moment later you get all 12 representations of that molecule with their various properties all glued into the right place that you can export and do your experiment. And that's all I wanted to say, really. These are the Utopia team at the University of Manchester. And thanks to various people who have given me various ideas for that talk. And that's all. So thank you.
Thank you.